Oh, happy Valentine's Day. It's 10:10. Pete McMurray along with Jane Monzuris. I can't believe it. You're on Greek time, and you made it before 10:15
today.
Good
morning. Yeah, I had a busy morning already.
Wow. Valentine's Day. If you're watching us online at WGNradio.com, we have hearts all over the studio. This is very nice how the Cochran Show decorated things.
I'm loving the Valentine's Day love in here.
We have a marriage counselor coming in at 11 o'clock. Don't worry. This is a chance for you to add a little more spark to your marriage.
This is not about, what are we going to do if things go all wrong? This is about making things better.
I've been married 15 years. Hey, I need a little help.
Yes, absolutely.
More than anybody. I mean, one day I love my wife. The next day I want her to get hit by a bus.
And how does your wife feel about you daily?
Same thing.
Yep.
Absolutely. Especially last night.
Oh, no.
I had flowers waiting for her. She comes home in a crabby mood, the flowers, Charlie filled out a card.
And
it was nothing.
Did it change the
mood? It did not work. It didn't.
Who's taking the dog for a walk?
I got it. I got everything. I made dinner. It's all good.
The flowers wilted the second she walked in the door.
Did you happen to see my Twitter or Facebook page today?
I didn't see it today, Pete.
I had a dryer sheet hanging out of my pants.
Did someone take a picture of it? Is it up there to look at?
I left the house this morning. I took my son to school. I walked into school, said, "Happy Valentine's Day, everybody." I'm waving like a politician. Kiss Charlie. Get back in my car. Stop. Pump gas. I come to Tribune Tower. Walk in the lobby. The dryer sheet's still hanging. I have no idea. Walk across the street to Starbucks. Get Darlis a coffee because I thought she was going to do the first half hour because you were doing a TV shoot.
Yep.
Come back here. Say hello to the entire crew. Hug Cochran. And I went into the office in the right down here in the right across from the studios. And I look down. I see the dryer sheet hanging out of my pants.
So not one person said, "Hey, Pete, you got a dryer sheet hanging out the back of your pants."
Nobody.
Well, you are fashion forward, so maybe they thought it was like a butt cape.
If you are at Starbucks and you see someone with a dryer sheet hanging from their pants, do you say something?
Yeah.
What do you say?
A
complete stranger.
I either tap them on the shoulder and say, "Excuse me, do you want this here?" Or I pull it out for them, and then I go, "This was hanging off the back of your pants."
How about food or hanging from someone's face?
So, yes. So here's the thing. If I have something
hanging
on me, if I have a weird eyelash sitting on my cheek, I've got a dryer sheet hanging out the bottom of my pants, Kleenex coming out of my pocket, food in my molar, I would love it if it was there because I'd be embarrassed all day long. Most people won't tell you, but because I appreciate it, and you've got to do it on the DL. So you got to be like, "Hey, listen. This is what's going on.
Got a little something hanging from my face."
Exactly. Because you don't want to point it out and make them embarrassed. But I can't believe you went through your day. You went to the school. You came here to the radio station. And you had the dryer sheet. Did anyone see it?
Hugged everybody from the show. I don't know if they saw it or not. But most people say, you know, I would tell a person. But when you're in that moment, I don't know if you do. And you have to assess the situation.
Well, how well do you know the person? Maybe it's not a stranger.
Right.
You know, if someone you know, then you'd say, if it's a colleague, you say, "Hey, listen, what's this?" And somebody here would absolutely make fun of you for having that hanging out the back of your pants.
Absolutely. Pete, you got a dryer sheet hanging from your pants?
They wouldn't even they'd say it out loud, very loud.
I literally walked around the entire morning with a dryer sheet hanging out of my left pant leg.
But here's my question for you, Pete. Last night, you texted me a picture and said, "Clothes laid out for tomorrow, Jane." But didn't you see the dryer sheet then?
When I fill in for Cochran, I always lay out my clothes on the tub because I get dressed in the bathroom because I don't want to wake up my wife. You know, you wake up at 4 a.m, you come to work early doing a Steve Cochran show. I did the same thing last night.
And you were excited like a school kid. "Jane, here's my clothes."
And
I'm going to look back at that picture and see if I can see the dryer sheet. Because I wish I could have helped you out, Pete. I could have said, "Listen, you're going to have a catastrophe tomorrow."
I don't feel like anybody's going to tell me if I have food on my face here at WGN Radio. Pete, you got some spinach in the middle of your teeth. That's not happening.
Today it'd be, you got a little piece of chocolate hanging out on the front of your front tooth there.
I don't know. I don't believe people are going to tell me. A dryer sheet's easy, too. It's not like food hanging from your teeth.
Well, I mean, people could think it's a piece of toilet paper.
Well, how about toilet paper from a girl's shoe? I've seen that before.
And you're, I mean, maybe you're out, you tell them, or you're at a fancy event and she's got this gown on with these gorgeous shoes and toilet paper.
I always tell people.
Yeah, or you step on it so they can keep going.
Or I will walk over and say, hey, you got a little something right there.
You do always.
Always.
With food, toilet paper,
everything.
Anything. You do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always that awkward moment when you tell the person that they have food on their face. You both feel weird, but they'll thank you later.
But that's how you have to do it, sort of quietly and like onto the side, so you could you don't really embarrass that person. Say, listen, I'm not making fun of you. You just we need to fix this.
Oh my god,
you're okay with
yourself. I'm at Starbucks. It was packed. I'm getting Darlis a coffee.
People could have thought it was your boxer shorts hanging out the bottom of your pants. Maybe it's your cuddle duds because it's chilly.
Happy Valentine's Day. We have Stuart Copeland, the drummer for the former drummer for the Police. They're now broken up, right? When was the last time they were here? Do you remember when they played Wrigley Field? How long ago that was?
No.
10 years ago.
Really? That was 10 years ago?
I thought it was like years ago. 2007 was their reunion tour.
Do you call it broken up, or can you just say they're retired? Or
taking some time away?
Yeah.
I don't know how that works. I guess we'll ask him. He'll be here at 10:35. We're in for Bill and Wendy. Bill and Wendy will be live today, along with Steve Bertrand, starting at noon today.
Celebrate Valentine's Day.
Yes. It's 7:20 WGN. News at 9. There we go. All right. Pete McMurray, Jane Monzuris in for Bill and Wendy. Bill, Wendy, and Steve Bertrand will be live at Gabe's Place in Glenwood. If you'd like to stop on by, they'll be there starting at 12 o'clock. Okay, for Valentine's Day. What are you doing for Valentine's Day with Kurt?
Yeah, so I'm working today, and then tonight we're going to just probably hang out and watch TV on the couch. Nothing.
You're not going to dinner?
We're not going to dinner, but here's what happens with Kurt and I. I didn't get him a card. I didn't get him anything, because every day is Valentine's Day when you date Kurt.
Oh, stop it.
I'm not kidding.
Cut it out.
I'm not kidding.
Are you one of those couples that don't really celebrate Valentine's Day?
We don't celebrate Valentine's Day. Now, would I like some flowers on Valentine's Day?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Of course.
Of course I would. Would I like a card? Of course I would. But does it bother me? No, because I feel like we're celebrating. We're happy every day. It's like every day is a celebration of love.
I say go big or go home. I feel like my wife's expecting something, so I had to go big this weekend.
Why don't you do something today?
I gave her a facial I didn't personally. I mean, I bought a facial for her on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Got her the roses yesterday. Today she woke up. She had a nice little card with a Starbucks card in there. She loves coffee.
That's fabulous.
I know.
You're a good husband.
I did. I brought it.
You're scoring major points, Pete.
Yes.
What do you get for Valentine's Day?
She bought me a pair of shoes that arrived on Friday.
Okay.
All right. That's nice. I'll take it.
Yeah.
That's
do you get
great.
A card? I think for
no
me.
No card.
I don't think Valentine's Day is a day of gift giving. For me, it's dinner. It's flowers. It could be, most importantly, a beautiful card. And I don't care if it's bought. I think it's great if it's handmade. Because it's just about saying, hey, by the way, I love you. Maybe we're not into this holiday.
Right.
But we love each other. So for me, it's not about the presents and gifts.
11-year-old Charlie McMurray made a card for his
mother. He made the
card. Yes.
That was so. The card that we all saw him signing on Facebook was a card that he made.
There was two cards. He filled in that one from the store, and he made another one.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, I feel the worst about is I should have sent a card to my sister, and I should have sent a card to my brother, and you know, I mean, more.
Oh,
I think more so for the people.
I forgot
in
my mother.
The people in your life that you love.
I'm a bad kid.
Because you live with your wife every day, because you kiss her on the lips every day and tell her you love her, don't you?
The average person. The average person spends how much on Valentine's Day? What do you think?
$11.50.
No. By the way, the Valentine's cards. Crazy.
They are $11.
$6.99? Come on.
That's why you got to make one.
$6.99 for just a regular card. You want a musical card, it's going to cost you $10.
Right.
That's crazy.
But that's
for
what
a greeting
that's
card.
That's what cards cost these days. $2.99, $4.99, $6.99 for one of those big ones, big elaborate ones with all the things sticking out of
it
them.
It was medium sized.
Yeah.
Medium.
So
$6.99.
You could always make a card, Pete.
How much? What do you think? Seriously.
I don't know. I'm going on the low end. I did say $11, but I'll up it if you're going to dinner or if you're just buying cards or flowers. So I'm going to say $50 to $75.
The average person listening right now spends $147.
$147 on Valentine's Day?
Now, I'm trying to think. I bought my wife a facial. That's $100.
Yeah.
Okay.
couple cards for $7
each. I went to Jewel last night. They were the roses were on sale, $29.99.
So there's another 30.
Yeah, that's $1.30.
So and then
we got
the
card, which was another $7.
Well, seven times seven, because about three, two for you, one for Charlie. That's 21.
Okay.
So now you're up to $147.
And a $25 Starbucks card.
Are you going so 175? Are you going to dinner tonight?
We are not going tonight. We had to postpone it. But we are going to dinner on Thursday.
But you'll make dinner.
Maybe.
You always make dinner, Pete.
$147. I guess that's true. I didn't even know it, and I did it.
I didn't spend a dime. I feel awful. I better spend some money today.
35% of Valentine's Day shopping takes place at department stores. Mm-hmm. How many people do you think are going to be shopping right now, today, to pick up Valentine's gifts?
Every single person you see in the store today is shopping for Valentine's Day.
3 out of 10 people listening right now, you're headed over to Jewel or someplace to pick up some Valentine's stuff.
But what is it, like, what's the gift? You know, in your head, you go big.
It doesn't matter what the gift is. It's the fact that you recognized the day.
Did you guys see what Jewel's doing with their chocolate-dipped strawberries right now?
No.
It's like, you know how when you go through like an omelet station, they've got the guy and you get the eggs there and then the ham there, whatever you want to put on it. Mm-hmm. They're doing that with strawberries right now. They might be doing it at other grocery stores too, but I noticed it at Jewel. You can get hand-dipped strawberries right there.
What's that going to run me?
I don't know, but people are lined up this weekend.
It's got to be 20.
Why not? I mean, listen, if you're like, I got to get something, here's some specially hand-dipped strawberries I can get right now. I don't care what it costs. I got to bring home something.
I think most of the people are buying it for themselves.
I love strawberries. Chocolate, okay. All right, I'm not
strawberry
a chocolate guy.
Strawberry dip bar, but you walk by that thing, you're probably like, you know what? I could use some strawberries right now. It's healthy, right? Strawberries.
And a little chocolate. They say, you know, 1 ounce is good for you every day. That's heart healthy.
If a dozen roses are $29.99 mm-hmm. today at Jewel, the strawberries are easily $21.
Mm-hmm. Probably so. But you got to bring something home.
Right. So now you're thinking, okay, I got to bring something home to Kurt.
Boy, no, I'm thinking he needs to bring something home to me. Strawberries with chocolate and maybe some champagne, I'd be happy.
What did he do last year? Did he do anything?
Nope. I think 1 year he got me an orchid because he's not a flower guy. I really wanted flowers and he brought me a
What do you mean he's not a flower guy? It doesn't matter if he's a flower guy. You're the flower girl.
Yeah, I love flowers. But I don't think he's ever given me flowers. I'm telling you, I don't need anything.
Bernice, you're married?
Yes, we are. 60 years.
How many years?
60.
61 yeah. years. First of all, before you say anything else, what's the secret to 61 years?
I'll have my husband tell you. Just get up each morning, say, I love you, and she tells me she loves me, and I guess that works.
Okay. I like that they're passing over the phone. That's great. Bernice, what'd you get your husband for Valentine's Day?
I got him a small package of root beer Twizzlers because I know he likes root beer.
So he likes root beer. You got him the Twizzlers. At least you recognize the day and you got him something that he likes. It's perfect.
Yeah. You know what I got her?
What'd you get her?
In March, a 7-day cruise.
Wow. 7-day cruise. See, the guy's got to bring it. If you're a guy, you got to bring it.
That's fair.
I like it. Thank you for your call. Have a great day.
You're welcome. Thank you.
61 years. Wow, that's a long
time. Well,
did
you hear their secret? Wake up and say I love you.
Yeah.
Do you do that?
I try. I did today. I mean, some days you just don't like each other.
I think the key is wake up. That's the first part.
I just want to wake up.
61 years, wake up is the key there.
Well, when you have a kid or kids, everything is in a rush in the morning. Okay? And we got a dog. You got to let the dog out. You got to feed the dog. Then you got to make Charlie breakfast. You got to find his clothes.
No time to say I love you within that time.
There's always time to say I love you, baby. I love you.
That's it. It's the first
thing.
So much. I love you.
I feel like,
wake up. Happy Valentine's
I feel like I've done
Day.
Enough. My wife didn't even get me a card.
Well, maybe you'll get one today. Valentine's Day has just started. So I feel like a lot of the Valentine's happiness will be happening later on this evening. Dinners, cards, things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that.
Me neither. I don't think you need to do it first thing in the morning.
312-981-7200. But it's nice to wake up and see that card there, a little something, start your day off right.
I know. It's always fun to be surprised. Even though I say I'm not a Valentine's Day person, if there was a card, I'd be like, oh, how sweet.
By the way, 815 area code. You can text us at 312-981-7200. That's also our phone number. 9 berries for $11. So that must be the strawberries. Bought them yesterday.
9 berries for 11. Why just 9?
I don't know. That is very random. 9 dipped strawberries. So, Ryan, you didn't buy those at Jewel?
No, I
didn't.
You
just saw them.
I'm already invested. I went over the threshold for the average for my wife, and which is unusual for me, but... Well, it's going to come out today, but I got Hamilton tickets back in September,
oh.
And I've been sitting on them and waiting. And, I mean, I want to tell her so bad. There's so many times I've wanted to tell her, we're going to Hamilton this summer, but
I'm finally going to
be able to give her the tickets.
Oh, that's fabulous, and good for you for keeping the secret, because today's going to be great.
Gosh, I was thinking about doing it for Christmas, but I had another idea. See, I've already got, like, the next 3 gift ideas planned, so I'm just sitting on them.
You should write a book, Pete, and you should buy it.
No. Gigi, turn down your radio.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Gigi, you with me?
Yes, I am.
All right, go ahead. You're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. For Valentine's, I paid off my husband's truck loan. It was $4,400. Now he'll have a title and he'll be thrilled.
Will you marry me? Thank you, Gigi.
Have a good day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
312-981-7200 at 720 WGN. Pete McMurray, Jane Monzuris, and for Bill and Wendy, they'll be live at Gabe's Place in Glenwood starting at noon with Steve Bertrand, one of the greatest drummers in the history of rock and roll, sitting across from me. Rolling Stone magazine ranked him number 10 on the 100 greatest drummers of all time, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2003 as a member of the Police. He is back in town to perform with the Chicago Opera Theater on Saturday, February 18th, Friday, February 24th, and Sunday, February 26th. For tickets, go to chicagooperatheater.org. It is Stuart Copeland. It's good to see you again.
Well, thanks for having me back here.
You have great hair, by the way. Can I just say that?
You do have great hair.
He does
just
have great
slightly
hair.
Slightly less of it than a few years ago.
You had a full head of hair.
Yeah. And it's all mine.
I feel like you're in Chicago a lot.
I feel like I'm in Chicago a lot. I'm getting to really like it here. Walking up and down the Magnificent Mile here. Is all Chicago just like this?
Yeah,
we
never have any snow, right?
I've been here for that.
Perfect sunshine.
Chicago cold is a unique form of cold when you combine it with that wind. But here, you know, my suitcases are full of long johns and mittens and all that stuff, and I'm walking around here with my shades on. It's
40 degrees, man.
Yeah.
Where do you call home? California?
California, Southern California.
Okay.
You
so
brought the sun. Thank
yeah,
you.
This is great weather for you.
Well, you know, in California, we love the rain. The rain washes away the tears. that's a Woody Allen joke, okay. Yeah. But, I mean, we like weather because it's sunshines every day. And every now and then we get storm clouds and, like, Sturm und Drang, you know.
Right.
And we all get excited by that and crash into each other on the freeways and stuff. And it's kind of a big deal when we get a bit of rain.
You're working with the Chicago Opera Theater. What are you doing now?
I am observing. I have done my work. I am the composer of the piece, which means that I finished about a month ago and got the scores over here to the players and the singers and the designers and the director and the producers and all this stuff. And so I'm here in California, in Chicago, observing all these other people work on this child that I've created. I create a document, this huge orchestral and vocal score.
Okay.
I hand it over about a month ago. And they all learn it, figure out, and I'm watching them put this thing up and make a reality out of this story, the invention of Morel.
How long does that take?
Well, it took me 3.5 years to create that document. It's a blueprint. It's all the music and all the story and the dialogue and everything. And it took that long to make, and they've been working on it for months before I got here. And it's an amazing thing to hear this fruit of my brain. You know, you just have an idea, and then you see just all these resources thrown at making it a reality. It's pretty exciting.
So how does it work when you go from a rock band to writing this beautiful book?
You were stumped there for a minute.
Like you're composing.
Right.
From
a rock band to...
He was waiting for you, too.
Like
he
an orchestra, this orchestrated piece with all of these different elements. And
I can fill in that gap for you.
Thank you.
20 years before The Mast as a hired gun film composer. You know, when the rock band thing expired, I guess, you know, we'd been playing stadiums for 2 years and our last 2 albums had, you know, gone through the roof. And eventually, what else is there in life? So we all fanned out across the world. Mm-hmm. And I ended up doing film music, you know, to feed my family. And it's kind of fun work. Now, during the course of film scoring, every so often, in fact, my first film, Francis Coppola, turns around and says, I want strings, you know, because it doesn't sound like a movie unless you've got an orchestra. So part of being a film composer is figuring out how to use an orchestra.
Can I stop you for a second? Francis Ford Coppola turns to me and says, I need strings.
Well, that left me with a problem. I mean, I call up the contractor and I say, hey, you know, director wants strings.
Right.
And he says, well, how many strings would you like? I don't know. How many strings are strings? Three, five, nine? I don't know. Strings. Director wants, so he sends over 20 guys.
Okay.
And and it was an eye-opener, which is part of what brings me here to Chicago today, was that when I book a guitarist, okay, guitarist comes over, you get him, give him the afternoon, and he brings his amps and cartridge and plugs and 20 guitars, and how about the 58 Strat? No, maybe the Telecaster. And you spend the afternoon with the guy, and it's a wonderful thing. You trade ideas, you say, okay, this scene here, it goes da-da-da-da, and then it gets kind of, see where Diane Lane looks at Matt Dillon? Okay, right there, give me a schwang. And he knows what I mean by a schwang,
right,
you know.
Sure.
And you talk to him and you go back and forth. Okay, the string guys come in. 20 of these string guys. And culturally, they are distinct from my tribe.
Yes. They don't really understand rock speak.
They're okay, like, what is a schwing again?
Okay, so I get in there trying to explain to these guys what a schwang is. And they're all sitting there and I say, so this first scene, it comes in when Diane Lane looks at Matt Dillon, I'm like, give me a kind of thing. And then it kind of turns into this, it kind of grooves out there. And as I'm talking to him, bonding with him, and from my point of view, this is what you do with your musicians when they come in. You want to get them chivvied up and give you, you know, good result. And they're looking more and more doubtful. And eventually one of them raises his hand and says, oh, maestro, do you want us to play what's on the page here or whatever the heck you're talking about? And I play the page. That's the point. You see, with orchestral players, classical players, if you like, but orchestral is what they really are. Mm-hmm. They read. They are musicians of the eye. If you put that on the page, they play it.
They
the
got
hairpins,
it.
The articulation. It's not just da-da-da-da-da. It's da-da-da-da-da. And you put all that on, and they play it. Those string players were in and out of the studio in about 45 minutes.
You're
now,
kidding.
That guitarist would have taken all afternoon while sure. we discussed right. different forms of the schwang. Is it a schwang or a schwing?
Yeah.
So that relationship with the page, music that you do your homework. You don't work it out with the guy on the day. You do your homework in the quiet of your, you know, your office, and you put it. So whether it's the Chicago Symphony with 60 guys, mm-hmm. it's all there. I work with them for 2.5 hours and play a show that night, which is what I did last time here in Chicago.
Right.
And so when you put it all on the page, like creating this document for the opera here with the, you know, the Chicago Opera Theater, that is a, you put it all on the page, and then that huge cohort of talented people take that and run with it. And I'm sitting here just enjoying the show.
Stuart Copeland in studio with us. It's so interesting to me, being a musician, you wake up in the morning and you compose, or you wake up in the morning and you...
With the birds singing.
And you write
a song. Actually, no, it's not that. I have to go to the top of the mountain with the storm and the thunder and lightning and offer up my heart unto the muses. Please give me another tune.
You're a rock star. I mean, it's just, you have that thing in your brain that says, okay, I can write music and I'm going to do it today. But do you ever get writer's block? Because you hear about people with writer's block.
Well, I have writer's flood.
Writer's flood. It just keeps going and
it
you don't know where to
going.
Go with it?
Yeah, it's a gift. And it's, you know, to be a musician actually is a combination of gifts. Manual dexterity.
Okay.
A certain amount of autism is involved. You know, being able to do these repetitive exercise
sure.
all day instead of having a life.
Right.
There's various, and then there's the musicality, which is kind of a much more mysterious gift. But the composing thing is quite distinct. So many musicians are incredible players, great musicians, but they have the music that goes through their head as they're walking down the street is some their favorite music. Mine is different. Composers have their own rubbish going through their head, their own cacophony, their own, whether it's, this is that doesn't mean to say it's good or bad, but it's there and you have that flood kind of.
So could you
not.
Be at Walgreens one day and suddenly you hear like a tap and think, oh my God, I got something here. I need to write it down. Is that the way it works?
That happened to me in Walgreens just the other day.
Right across the street in the Wrigley building.
Yeah.
But what is it like to step into, I mean, I guess you're not going to be a typical composer because of your background and who you are, but if they've got their own thing going on in their head and you've got your own thing, how does it translate into this piece that you've put together?
Well, there's this word classical, which I have to deal with in this world. I have to sneak in to get the Chicago Symphony to let me in the building. I got to be classical, so-called. But I'm not. I didn't die 200 years ago. I'm a rock musician, and my music that I make and concerts that I create are a call and response. Let's burn the building down. You know, let's wake the place up, shake the building. I got 60 guys on stage.
Yeah.
You know, let's rock the joint. I am not a classical composer. I am an orchestral composer.
Okay.
I'm a rock musician who writes orchestral music that rocks. And the intention is to burn down the building.
Yes.
And with this opera... Once again, it's an opera with using classical tools. Those singers are classically trained, and they have chops that you just don't get on Broadway or in a pop song. The orchestra playing in the pit, those are classical musicians, but I use them for my nefarious purpose, which is to burn down the building. Now, operas don't necessarily burn down buildings, but they should beguile you and transport you and take you to a place.
Sure.
And I use those tools, those classical tools, to get there.
ChicagoOperaTheater.org. Stuart Copeland in studio with us. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to ask you about the Grammys and, you know, talk a little bit about the old days, if that's cool with you.
You're going to have to tell me about the Grammys because I didn't watch them.
Well, I do have some questions for you about the Grammys.
Oh, I'll have an opinion whether I saw them or not.
Okay. It's 720 WGN. There's the tune. 720 WGN. Pete McMurray, Jane Monzuris in for Bill and Wendy. They'll be live at Gabe's Place in Glenwood starting at 12 o'clock along with Steve Bertrand. In studio with us, Stuart Copeland is back in town to perform with the Chicago Opera Theater on Saturday and then on Friday, February 24th and Sunday, February 26th. ChicagoOperaTheater.org for tickets.
Well, actually, let me correct one little thing there. I won't be performing myself.
Yes.
I will be hog-snarling drunk in the back row watching everybody else perform.
What if someone makes a mistake? Do you just call it out?
I'll just shout, hey, Luigi, speed it up a little.
Do you get boozed up before the show, or do you have to wait?
No, I will be stone cold sober.
Okay, good.
It's classical, remember.
That's No. But I have to represent.
Yes.
You know.
The Grammy Awards. Did you happen to see them on Sunday?
No.
Do you care about the Grammys?
No.
Did you win any Grammys in your career with the police?
I won five.
You won five?
Yeah.
And do they mean anything to you?
No, not anymore. Well, I guess they mean something briefly when people... I mean, I got a cupboard at one end of my studio.
All right.
Which is where I put my... I just throw them all in one corner. And occasionally people wander over and look at it. But you know, when you get awards, you're real excited that day. The next morning, you wake up, you look at it, and it's in bed with you, you know. And you wake up with your award,
yes.
and you wake up with it, and you fondle it, and then you put it on the thing, and for the next week or so, you walk past, and you go, great. But towards the end of that week, the great turns into,
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, like a week later, it's very quickly loses its zing.
Mm-hmm.
And decades later, there's nothing. I didn't even see them.
Doesn't matter.
That's how I feel when I get a new pair of shoes.
Yeah. Now, children, on the other hand, are the gift that keep on giving. And
sure.
You realize that life and its real rewards are what it's all about. And those accolades, and you see the capriciousness of how they are awarded. And, it, you know, like the Rolling Stone top drummers of all time thing, you know. Buddy Rich is not, or Mitch Mitchell isn't on that list.
Who is number one on that list, by the way?
I don't know.
You're number 10.
Probably Neil Peart or Ringo or something.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, I was once five, gosh darn it.
John Bonham. You got pushed back?
Yeah, I've been demoted. But never mind. You see, the point is that it doesn't really mean anything because, you know, me and my buddies, all of my drummer chums, we all kind of respect each other or not. You know, it doesn't matter. We're all buddies anyway.
Right.
But and music is not like sport where it's quantifiable. You made this many runs. You won that many super. It's not. It's just a matter of opinion anyway. So those accolades really don't mean anything after a while.
George Michael passed away. Adele did a nice tribute at the Grammy Awards. Did you know George coming up? It seems like you guys were
I did not
around
know
the same time.
No, I didn't know him personally.
Are you a fan of Adele?
Which one is she?
So.
No, I'm not a fan of Adele, but I respect her enormously because she has an incredible talent.
Right.
That's not the kind of music that I listen to, but of course I absolutely respect her gifts.
What do you? Are you a rock guy?
What are you listening to?
Well, I listen to a lot of Slipknot.
Okay.
For some reason, that just takes me back to the
heavy.
I love my Slipknot.
Okay.
But no, I listen to really obscure radio, something on iTunes radio called Shirley and Spinoza,
okay,
which gives whole new meaning to eclectic. They play 1950s cigarette commercials overlaid on some strange soundscape, and then they go into a Greek drinking song followed by a Beach Boys tune followed by gosh knows what. And sometimes, because I wire up my studio and do my thing in there, and I've got the music playing, and I sometimes look, is that even music? I don't care. It's different.
Right.
I want to live inside your brain for, like, at least
an
hour.
Oh, no, you don't.
I do.
It's going 1,000 miles an hour.
The inner torment.
It's so fun. There's a lot going on, a lot of creativity inside there.
The last time you guys did a stadium tour, was it 2007 you were at Wrigley Field with the police?
It was. I remember it.
That's crazy.
Now, Wrigley's the one with the buildings around it, with
yes.
the grandstands
yes.
on
that's
the
where the Cubs play. Right.
That's unique.
Yeah.
There's no other state. Ebbets Field in Boston doesn't have that. No, this one, Wrigley's, that's a very special state because you feel all that has happened there. This is a storied place.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. Shea Stadium felt like that. Sadly gone now.
Right. Was it fun for you to do the reunion back in 2007?
It was a mixture of fun and pain. You know, we get along really well until we start making music together.
Isn't that
it's,
interesting?
One of those anomalies. We love each other like siblings yep. and so on like that, and yet we drive each other insane.
But well, you still love each other.
Yeah, absolutely. You
You're
know,
with
we and
same
we understand what the
every
difference
single
is.
Day. I mean, that would drive you crazy. It's
well,
like a
very
marriage.
Little of the day, actually. They keep us in separate cages. And so our interactions are cordial, and we really do love each other. We all three of us, we conquered the world together. You can't replicate that in any other relationship. We are bound. And so the bond is very, very deep. And we understand, because that bond is so deep, that we have profound differences in our participation in music. Music has a different purpose in our lives. For me, music is a celebration. For others, music is an anesthetic. It's a place, a special place that you escape to and do beautiful, wondrous things. For me, I'm here to kick out the jams. And the tension between those two things created the police.
Right, right. And do you...
It doesn't make it easy or, you know, it doesn't make it easy.
Do you guys still talk?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
You text each other on the birthdays?
Valentine's Day?
Yeah. Well,
Sting, I love you. Happy Valentine's Day.
No.
Andy?
We were exchanging emails the other day. And in fact, he said, love from Houston. I thought, I'll bet he's going to show up at halftime, you know. But I guess he was just doing a show there. And so I told all my friends, watch this, the halftime. You know, my buddy's going to be on. I'll bet he's going to be on. You know, cryptic little love from Houston. You know, this is a day or two before the Super Bowl.
What I think is great about that is you just said, watch the show. I think my buddy's going to be on. And, like, if anyone else got this.
And then there's some chick up there in a trapeze.
It's Gaga.
Sorry, Lady Gaga. Just kidding.
Gaga.
Can you imagine that woman jumping off from that place there? You won't see me doing that. That was incredible. Jumping off the top of that stadium. You know, head first, it looked like.
It was pre-recorded.
I don't care. She jumped off of something.
But she was still very high above the crowd on those platforms.
Of course,
I thought she killed
it.
Yeah. I would have rather seen my buddy jump off the platform personally.
Me too. Yeah, absolutely.
Head first.
Maybe together, he'd fly.
When the police were the biggest rock band on the planet, did you appreciate it at the time when you were playing, or you were just doing your job? And it's like, hey, I'm making money now. This is cool.
Yes and no. Obviously, it's very noisy when you're there, and it is, you know, the fact that you are there is thrust upon you every day. You can't miss it. You walk out, and there's 80,000 people screaming. That gets your attention. But at the same time, and I've talked to Beatles, Stones, and others of the, you know, from way beyond before my time. None of us ever thought that our music would last. It was made to be consumed today and forgotten tomorrow. We took 20 minutes to come up with it. We expected it to be gone in 20 minutes. We are all, my generation, I'm like two or three generations from the beginning of it. You know,
right.
Talking to Ringo Starr, he's like two or three generations ahead of me. And none of them or us expected our music to come back 20 years or 30 years later, suddenly with a new life, with a new veracity, with new meaning as something, a part of cultural history? Culture? What? We made this stuff while eating a sandwich.
You're classic rock, man. The police. Do you get a check in the mail like every quarter? How does that work when you get paid? Two times a year?
I don't get a check. Somebody somewhere gets a check. Probably in New York, somebody gets a check and tells me about it.
Stuart, here you go.
That's great.
It's nice. So you're in town for the next week and a half. What are you going to be doing?
I'm going to be here last night. We were at the Sitz Probe.
Okay.
Now, a lot your listeners are probably going, what?
Really?
Where is that?
Yeah.
A Sitz Probe is where you sit, and the singers come in there on the stage, and the stage is now built, and they're now working on the stage instead of in a room somewhere. And they or the tech rehearsal, which happens by day, and I try to stay away. This is when they figure out how to get off and on the stage because, you know, they bump into things, and, oh, my God, this light doesn't work here. We got to move that. And the sits probe is when they sit, and they get the acoustics. The orchestra is playing, and they figure out, we get the balance between the singers and the orchestra. And
sure.
Wait a minute, when I'm singing my line from over here, I can't actually see the conductor from this position, so let's move, you know. And it's sort of the musical part of getting the cast onto the stage and working with the stage.
And when you're sitting in the sits probe, like, and you're saying, okay, she can't see the orchestra and I need to, do you weigh into that and say, let's move her, or that doesn't sound right?
I only in very general terms. I've had my chance up till now, in rehearsals up to now, I've had my chance to work with the orchestra directly and say to the bass player, you know, that line there is actually a little more, it's on the page, but still communications or mistakes that I've made on the score where, you know, that flute can't hear it. She needs to go up an octave, you know, and stuff like that. And the conductor, right. Andres Mitasek, is helping me with that as well. You know, just getting, I've had my opportunity to mess with it. Now at the sits probe, it's up to Andreas, the conductor, and the rest. I mean, if I, you know, I don't want to interrupt the flow. Other than, you know what, a little more volume there, general stuff.
So if people are walking along Michigan Avenue and they see...
In fact, there's one right now.
They see a guy in Walgreens with glasses and great hair, and he's starting to compose some
music. We're on the Magnificent
music.
Mile. There isn't a Walgreens on the there Magnificent Mile.
Right across the street.
Really? Yeah.
That's what they're pointing.
I beg its pardon.
It's Stuart Copeland. Thank you for coming in. It's great to see you again.
Oh, it's great to be back here.
And if you're not a fan of opera, you're still going to love The Invention of Morrell.
I think so.
Okay.
Because it takes it beyond. I love it.
ChicagoOperaTheater.org for tickets this Saturday, Friday, February 24th, and Sunday the 26th. Stuart Copeland, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
It's 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It's 11:07. You know,
I like that song, too.
Happy Valentine's Day. Well, it sounded great off the air.
Sure did.
We wanted to bring in a marriage counselor in studio to talk about keeping the spark in your marriage. It is Valentine's Day. Bob Ryan is a licensed clinical professional counselor. He counsels adults, families, couples, you name it. He's in studio with us. Happy Valentine's Day. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Happy Valentine's Day to you.
Is it normal that one day you love your spouse and the next day you just want to kill them?
I take the fifth.
I mean, that's normal. The ebbs and flows of
ebbs
a marriage,
and flows
Bob,
are normal,
right?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Because I've been married 15 years, and we wanted to have a marriage counselor. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, there's...
Oh, it's fair.
You're number seven. Whew. Let me tell you. We made it, though. We did.
Good.
How do we put the spark back into our marriage? Today's Valentine's Day. Do guys need to bring it today?
It helps. But really, it's an everyday thing. Just small little things. If you're noticing that you're putting yourself in front of your spouse, maybe that's not the right approach. When you started dating, you did everything for her. You went over the top. You probably took her out to dinner to places you couldn't quite afford.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I wooed her.
Where did that go?
It's still there sometimes. You know, it gets busy. You have kids. You have activities. Both parents work. You know.
That's right. That's why you need to do the little things. Maybe it's the opposite of dieting. You know, dieting. You know, here, dieting, you don't want that extra spoonful of sugar a day. And it adds pounds. That's, in a relationship, that's what you do want.
Oh.
Is... just a little thing. Once a day, tell your significant other, you know, I really appreciate you, that you do this, how you do this. That little, one little statement, yeah, I really appreciate you.
You know what? It's funny that you say that because people don't say thank you anymore. They don't say thanks or, hey, I really appreciate that you did this.
To their partner or their spouse.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And that's an important thing to do.
I mean, I feel like you do it more at work than you do at home.
Well, at work, we're forced in a bit to focus on something. At home, we've got, we have children, we have iPads, we have our phones, we have our computers, we have 155 channels on our television.
We're tired from work.
Yeah, we're tired from work.
Yeah. So talk about, so day-to-day responsibilities will sometimes just sort of wipe away all those honeymoon dreams that you once had when you were a newly married couple. How do you and what do couples do to press pause and really reevaluate what their lifestyle is today? Like, what can they do? What's the first thing?
I like what you said. As I say, the points you earn don't last. You know, you can earn points, but they go away. Before having to stop and reevaluate, it's really about communication. Research has shown that couples that communicate in a certain way or show certain characteristics in how they communicate are more likely to stay together or to get divorced. And people who try to avoid criticisms, and that's a personal affront, you know, not a complaint, the garbage is never taken out, but, a personality trait. People who use criticisms are more likely to fall apart. Those little, you may have seen couples that have, you know, in public have little side comments at the other person's expense. It's called contempt. It's one of the biggest predictors a couple won't stay together.
Really?
Yeah. So talking and listening for the emotional content underneath that complaint that the garbage isn't taken out. You know, some people have a sensitive nose. You know, it's upsetting. I come in and the kitchen smells.
Well, I don't understand why you can't put the cap on the toothpaste. It seems very simple. You unscrew it, you put your toothpaste on your toothbrush, but you can't put the cap back on.
Okay, that said, you probably knew that when you were in college.
Right.
So if you know you're going to come into the bathroom
uh-huh.
and the cap's going to be off the toothpaste.
Yep.
Why are you mad?
The little things that were cute when you were dating now drive you nuts 15 years in.
But you make that part of your routine.
I understand.
So I just put the cap on the toothpaste.
I ignore it.
One of the things I do.
I do. I ignore it.
But sometimes, you want to put your spouse first in the little things, and they will then put you first in the little things.
So you were talking about communicating being mm-hmm. a great factor to making long-lasting relationships. Do you think it's important for couples on a yearly basis, a five-year plan, 10-year, whatever it is, to reset goals when it comes to family, travel, money, sex, anything and everything you can think of? Do you go back and reset those goals, or do you just write the first script and then you go?
Oh, my gosh. You nailed it, because I just said that to my wife 2 months ago. I go, we need to have a long afternoon. We need to go over everything, especially our goals.
Mm-hmm. I think more than goals, I'm more of a, I'm an artist first, so I'm not that goal kind of setting person. I'm kind of like, let's go with the flow a little bit. But talking about what you want and what you need, communication.
Right.
So it doesn't need to be so much hard, fast goals, but knowing what the person wants, where they might want to live in 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
I'm turning around to somebody sweet.
Is this your wife that's here and you're turning
my
around?
My significant
your googly eyes.
Uh-huh.
It's a little honey.
Yeah,
you brought a little studio with us.
Where do you want to move?
Sweetheart,
wink,
please.
Wink. But so the thing is, like, maybe you write those goals down, you write those ideas down, like you want to do Pete, or in your case, Bob, you would draw them. Right?
Yeah.
Because you're creative. Uh-huh. However you can get them out is kind of what I'm taking away.
Here's something I do with couples. They come in and I'll have them sit down and separately write out 10 items that would make an ideal relationship for them. And it doesn't have to be realistic or not, but actionable items.
Okay.
And if it's a trip to Fiji, how many times a year?
Great.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Then they read them out loud, put a check mark on their own list of what's similar. And then they go home and they combine the list into 10 items. And usually, most often, you'll find couples have real consensus in what they want. They just haven't talked about it.
Okay.
Those little things that toothpaste cap has gotten in the way.
Pete's already writing these down.
I am taking notes. He's a licensed clinical professional counselor, Bob Ryan, in studio with us. If you have a question, you can call us or even text us at 312-981-7200. What about boundaries? I notice now that I've been married 15 years, I know that I need boundaries in my life. I know if I've had a rough day, I'm not going to go home right away. I'm going to probably go to the store and kind of unwind because I don't want to take it out on my family. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, okay. Especially today where a lot of individuals work from home and the working spouse comes home and immediately the person who's been home all the time either wants immediate help with the kids or help boxing up all the stuff that I've made labels for. You need to say, I was just an hour in traffic. Can I at least sit? And here's what I hear from gentlemen in their 30s. I just need to play the Xbox for 40 minutes. I don't
understand. Xbox for 40 minutes.
Put a timer on it.
I don't understand it.
We get home, we both hit the ground running, man. You got to do homework,
it's
make dinner.
Like if you want to go to the store and relax for a minute, or somebody just needs to take a stop and they want to play the Xbox, I think whatever, just to unwind for that 30 minutes. Sometimes I like to just sit down for 30 and then I'll go make dinner.
Yeah. Right.
Oh,
yeah. Just to regroup.
I'm going to take a quick break and we'll answer some of these text messages. 312-981-7200. Bob Ryan, he's a licensed professional counselor in studio with us. You counsel adults, families, and of course, you're a marriage counselor too. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, Jane introduced me to a couple that's been married over 50 years. We're going to find out what the secret is and see if it matches up with what you think, Bob, okay?
Great.
All right, it's 720 WGN. Oh, that's nice. Bill and Wendy and Steve Bertrand live from Gabe's Place in Glenwood. We're on until noon today. Pete McMurray, Jane Monzuris in studio with us. Bob Ryan. He is a clinical professional counselor. Bob, where can they find you? What's the website where they can find you?
UrbanBalance.com. We have 8 offices in the Chicago area, new office in the St. Louis area. There you'll find insurance-friendly counseling for couples, individuals, groups, children, and adults.
Yeah, you know, Joyce Martyr, she was one of the co-founders, founder. She's wonderful. Founder. I've had her on Living Healthy Chicago many times.
Awesome.
So, loving Joyce.
About 10 years ago, I met this couple. Jane introduced me because you're friends with their daughter, Pam.
Correct.
And I thought, wow, this couple is so in love, and I didn't realize that they've been married for so long. On the phone with us is Jim and Ann from Burr Ridge. Ann, how long have you been married? How many years?
We'll be married 53 years in July.
53 years.
Congratulations.
That's unbelievable.
Well, thank you.
What is the key to 53 years?
Lots she of laughs. Things, I think. Well, I don't know. Jim is on the phone, too, so do you want to go
first?
You know
what? I think it's important that we clarify one thing when it comes to longevity in a marriage. And that is why. And when I talk about why, I'm saying there are some people that stay together because of financial, considerations. They stay together because of their children. They stay together because they want to experience a certain image in society or in their community. And then there's another category, where people stay together because they truly love one another. They enjoy sharing life experiences together. And they feel a sense of blissfulness because neither one is self-centered. They're giving human beings. And I like to think that our particular marriage over the years, it falls into the latter category.
That is awesome. Wow.
They're just like, when I see them, they're just lovely people and they have a lovely family. But Ann and Jim, talk about this. You actually, married 53 years in July, but you only dated for 4 months?
Well, what happened was when I met Jim at a dance, I guess he was just odd. And he's like, oh, I got to date that girl. Anyway, so he called me, and we went on 6 dates. 6. And then my dad was very strict. He was from Greece. And he's like, well, I don't think you can go out with him anymore. He goes, that's a lot of dates for one person. And on the other hand, Jim's mom told him the same thing. She said, if you don't ask this girl to marry you, she says, I think they're going to call it quits. And she was right. So Jim proposed, and we got married the next year.
Wow. Four months. I guess when
six,
you know, you know.
Six dates.
Six dates. And I've met Jim. He's a stud. He really is.
He's a great guy. And you know what? It's not to say that we haven't been on a roller coaster. There were days where we had those roller coaster rides. You know, there were years that we had those rides. But you got to fight. You got to be diligent. You got to persevere. Because there were other days where we were just cruising and relaxing. So you got to take the good with the bad, you know. And when Jim would get down, you know, I'd have to lift him up and vice versa. When I was down, he would lift me up.
Right.
So, and I think with our kids, we always were on the same page. And I think that's important, that the kids can't play, you know, parents, you know, they can't play them one against the other. So we were always together on our decisions with them. And I have to say, we have a great family. I love our children. They're beautiful. They're and they love each other, which is very important.
Well, Bob, we have the marriage counselor in studio. I'm just going to go to Ann's house and get advice.
Have a few drinks with Jim.
Bob's going to Ann's house for advice.
Bob's like, yeah, I'll drive
over.
With
You're
you.
You're all welcome.
Ah, thank you, Ann.
Let me ask Jim before you guys go. Jim, Bob, who is a marriage counselor in studio with us, he says that the key to marriage is communication. 53 years. I mean, there's some days where you didn't feel like talking to your wife, right?
No, you know, to believe it or not, people think that I'm telling a white lie, but it's not true. The two of us have hardly ever argued because the lines of communication have always remained open, and we've shared our inner thoughts, and, you know, we kind of work through, you know, whatever problems or challenges may be facing us. And we seem to be, you know, quite compatible, and our philosophy of life is quite similar. So consequently, you know, we don't get into a situation where we become argumentative. And
wonderful.
I feel blessed because, you know, I don't know how many other people have experienced, you know, the type of marriage that we have experienced. But I think I'm the luckiest person in the world because I was able to marry someone that was just as empathetic and kind.
Now you're making me look bad, Jim.
No, you know what I think, too? You can't be self-centered in a marriage.
Wow.
You got to give and you got to take, you know?
It's absolutely true.
That is right. The key. What are you guys, it's Valentine's Day. You have big plans? Jim, you taking her out?
Well, you know, I have a daughter who's a planner, and she's already made arrangements for dinner tonight. So we're the four of us are, that is my granddaughter and my daughter, because the other two children are out of state. So we're going to go to a local restaurant and sit down and enjoy the holiday, you know, together.
That's what it's all about right there. Ann and Jim, 53 years. God bless you two. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you. And everybody have an enjoyable Valentine's Day.
Be well and happy Valentine's Day.
Love you guys.
Take care.
Love you. Love you, Jane. Bye-bye, Pete.
Boy, that's a couple that has it together, Bob.
That is. I don't want that to dishearten anybody who's right now going through a tough spot.
And that's a good point, actually. I mean, some people do go through tough spots, and, right. You know, it's Valentine's Day. Love is, like, not only in the air, but it's pushed in your face today. So I think you're right. You know, you got to.
But Jim and Ann were very upfront. They had rough spots that they went through, and they talked about putting the other person first and talking all the time.
Bob Ryan, licensed clinical professional counselor. Thanks for coming in. What's the website again? People can find you.
www.urbanbalance.com.
Urbanbalance.com. Yes. And talk to your spouse when you get home today.
Yes.
Communication is the key.
Give each other a kiss.
Kiss on the lips, Pete. That's
now you're talking,
that's
Bob.
His kiss New Year's resolution. Kiss his wife on the lips every day.
Yes, there it is. 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Pete McMurray, Jane Monzuris in for Bill and Wendy. There'll be a Gabe's Place in Glenwood, Steve Bertrand, starting at noon today if you want to stop out and join them. Talking about proposals. How did you propose to your significant other? 312-981-7200. If you get on the air, you get a chance to win a $100 gift card to Southern Cut, a new barbecue joint at Delaware and Michigan Avenue, right across from the Hancock.
Date night right there.
It is.
Yeah. Love
and you
that.
Can also text us. If you send us a text, please put your name so we can give you credit. 312-981-7200. There's so many funny text messages right now.
But I want to know how you proposed to Sarah.
It was pretty basic. Our first date was at Old Chicago, which was a pizza joint in Rockford. We were both living at Rockford at the time. Mm-hmm. And 3 years, 2.5 years later, we went back to Old Chicago. We had dinner. We went back to her place. And I remember getting down on one knee, and she's sitting there on the couch. She's like, "What are you doing?" I go, "Just hold on." She's like, "What? Get up." And then I had this elaborate speech ready to go. And I proposed. But the biggest fear that any guy has when you ask her father for her hand in marriage, it's terrible. Her dad lived in Wausau, Wisconsin. There was a huge snowstorm. I was going to drive up that weekend, and I couldn't make it. So I called him on the phone, and I'll never forget this. I was living in a studio apartment at Clark and Elm, and I was standing at my bar. I had my bullet points ready to go, and I'm going through them. His name was Chuck. We called him Big C. I'm like, "Big C, this is why I want to marry your daughter. I'm going to move to Chicago. She's going to be safe." Excuse me. And his response was, "She's never going to do it."
What?
I'm like, "Big C, of course she's going to do it. We've been in love 2.5 years. I don't know. Good luck on that one." I'm like, "Okay."
And no, not even "I'll give you my blessing." He's like, I don't need to because it's not going to happen.
He's like, "Good luck. I hope it works." I'm like, "Thanks."
Aw, and look at this 15 years later.
15
true
wonderful
bliss.
Years
this
later.
Is so nice.
Yes.
Yeah, I've never been engaged, but I did a TV segment once with some people that got engaged. So I thought this was pretty creative. Do you know the DOA escape room in Villa Park?
I'm not familiar with it.
It's so cool. So you go in there. What it is, it's like 60 minutes to solve clues to get to plan your escape out of this room. So it could be you and friends or a group. It could be you and a significant other. But what happened was this couple, you know, he had it all planned. He went in and he worked it out with the escape room. So they went and did this whole puzzle in 60 minutes. The very last clue to get out of the room. So they had 1 minute left and she opened it up and she had to read the clue. And the clue written in sort of like weird like script or like how do you pronounce this with Catherine, "Will you marry me?" And she read it three times like in this weird script. And then she ended up saying, "Catherine, will you marry me?" And he was down on his knee and she turned around and she was saying it. And there he was. And that's how he proposed. It was absolutely beautiful. Total complete surprise. Well, we were filming it. It was great.
As a guy, when the girl doesn't react right away, like you're thinking, okay, she's going to start crying. It's like, "Get up. What are you doing on one knee? What
no,
is
you
this?"
I think that's beautiful. Oh, you gotta get
I don't even remember. Like, I was so out of it. Like, the words that were babbling out of my mouth. I don't remember what I said. I don't remember what I did. But later she had the ring on and it seemed to work out. So
that's what a lot of people say. I don't remember, but I kind of remember the dinner.
The guys don't remember. But what I think is great is having that pre-planned person taking the photos of the engagement. So then you have those to remember because you don't. Right?
I had no one.
You were there at Sarah's no house.
I had no one either.
Right, Pete.
Yeah. I remember, I proposed to my wife. I was living in Memphis at the time, and so we were along the Mississippi River. And I remember watching a barge coming down, and then I kind of blacked out for the next 20 minutes. And then I remember the barge passing away. So I don't really remember much of anything, but the barge for some reason.
312 area code. I took my wife to the top of Lake Point Tower for dinner. Had an elaborate plan to have the ring come out with dessert and champagne. The plan had been in place for a month or so. When we got to the restaurant, I freaked out. And while she was taking off her coat, I went down on one knee. We have no idea what I said, but we've been together for 15 years.
Oh, see?
Great. All right.
I love proposal stories.
Let's go to Leslie. Yes. Leslie, how did you get engaged?
Actually, I met my husband in a bar one night, and we married the next day.
Were you in Vegas?
No, in a small town in Michigan. It was just a neighborhood bar.
Did you know him?
I'd never seen him before in my life. My friend and I walked into the bar, and he was with a bunch of guys, and he threw a pitcher of beer, and I ducked, it hit my girlfriend. And I went up to him and I said, "You jerk, you owe us an apology and a drink." And he said, "I like you." I said, "What?" He goes, "You have spunk. You know, you stand up for yourself. I like you." And I'm like, "Yeah, whatever." And by the end of the night, we were totally head over heels and
in love.
Yeah. And I wasn't about to give it away for free. So I said, "Put a ring on it." So we went the next day and put a ring on it.
How long have you been married?
And 37 years.
You got married the next day.
Yes.
Your husband's a closer. Look at that.
Yeah.
He made it happen. 37 years.
And you know what? I'm more in love with him now than when I met him.
So, like,
people always think we're newlyweds because we're just so connected and we're so physical. I genuinely like him as a person.
Really?
And I want what's best for him. And the way we look at it is every day is the day. So we wake up, we kiss. We walk by each other, we kiss. We hold hands when we walk our dogs. We eat all our meals together.
I guess when they say that when you know, and I guess you knew.
Really knew.
Yeah, yeah. And at one time we had a very difficult time in our marriage. And
that was day three.
I was going to say, what happens on day three when you're like, we married, it's day three.
It's day three. And we had a very difficult time in our marriage. We decided to get through it.
We shook hands. We're like, my name is.
I'll see you in the morning.
Well, we had some family issues and we really learned communication skills because we went to get a little bit of help just going, we're not understanding the situation.
Okay.
And how to improve it. And it wasn't necessarily us, but the situation.
37 years.
And after one night.
The psychologist looked at us and he goes, "I have never seen this in my life." And we're like, "Oh no." And he goes, "You are true soulmates."
Damn.
And he goes, "I thought I would never see that in my lifetime." But he said, "You two are so incredibly in tune."
Do you have any kids?
No, no. And that was an issue that we believe that every day, depending what happens, you just roll with it.
Okay.
And move on to the next day. So I had been pregnant 3 times, miscarriages.
Right.
Things like that. And it's like, okay, it's a new day. What do you want to do today?
So you had a rough go of it, but yeah, a new day is a new day.
And I like that motto.
Yeah.
Today's a new day, and you kiss and hold hands.
I want to go back to the bar for
today
a second.
Today is the day.
How many hours did he court you? How many hours
from
were you at the bar?
From when the beer throwing happened right when you walked in till you were head over
was
heels.
Was it 3? Was it 4?
6.
Well, you know, he was in tight jeans. He was over 6 foot blonde with big blue eyes.
So tight jeans does it every time.
Hello.
It took about 15 minutes.
15 minutes. God, I don't want to say you're easy, Leslie.
So darn cute.
Oh, Leslie, hold on the line. Thank you for your phone call.
Congratulations.
Wow.
Wow.
David, how did you propose?
Well, hold on here. Let me, my phone's a little goofy here.
My wife and I met on a blind date. And one of the first places we went to very shortly after we met was to the American Club up in Kohler. And very,
sure.
Very romantic environment.
Yep.
And we were driving around one day, just kind of touring the area. We drove by this really cute little house. I mean, the house restaurant on the shore of the Sheboygan River. It was called the River House. It was really cute. We walked in, a huge wooden bar. Just this gorgeous storybook venue. And I made up my mind right then and there I was going to propose to her there. Not right then. I figured I needed to, you know, get a few things out. We'd only right. been going out for like 6 months.
Okay.
We came back less than 2 months later. You know, we kind of knew what we were going to be doing, so to speak. I wrote her a poem, as we have been writing each other ever since we met. We write a lot of poems to one another. And I rehearsed this thing 18 jillion times. And right about when I was about to propose, I like started to sweat. And I said, "Excuse me, honey, I have to take a little break." And I retreated into the restroom and I tried to compose myself. I said, "You know, you can do this. Come on, you know, you can get us together." And I tried to compose myself and I did, went back and ultimately did propose to her. Unfortunately, she did say yes.
That is great. That is so relatable that you had to take a break, because all of us, all guys, can relate to that. I was sweating. Oh, my God. The ring was burning a hole in my pocket.
I'm going to lose the ring. Do you remember the poem?
Oh, wow. He's on hold. I put him on hold. I got to take a quick break so we can take some more phone calls. How did you propose to your spouse? 312-981-72. WGN, Bill and Wendy live at Gabe's Place in Glenwood, along with Steve Bertrand coming up at noon. Jane Monsouris to my right, and I'm Pete McMurray. We're talking proposals. Let's go to...
A lot of love happening here today.
Let's go to Lance. Lance, how did you propose to your spouse?
How are you guys doing today?
Good, man.
Great.
Good, good. Well, I was dating my current wife for about 5 years, and her father was a relatively older man, and he came up to me one day and says, hey, my daughter's very happy with you. I'd like to walk her down the aisle someday. I said, well, just hang tight. So within the next couple of weeks, I went to the Briar Street Theater. I bought 4 front row tickets for my wife, myself, and both of her parents. I talked to the general manager before the show came on. We have a special announcement that was written in the wall with the moving lights. One of the blue guys came out, pointed to Kathy. She told her to look at the screen. She looked at the screen. I got out of the seat, got in the aisle, got down on one knee. They had some confetti come down, and then the whole audience erupted and clapped. So
wow.
That's great.
Great planning, Lance.
That was 16 years ago.
And then the toilet paper at the end of the show.
All over.
Yeah, and everyone came up to us after the show. It probably took us an hour to get out of the theater.
That's great. Thank you, Lance. Hold on the line, 312-981-7200. Let's go to Joel. Joel, how did you do it?
Hey, it was Christmas Eve, and my father had a train from when he was 5 years old, an old Lionel train. So I brought my wife or my girlfriend over to the house to show her this really cool train that my dad had since he was a kid. And on the train car, there was a box that was wrapped up that had special delivery to Barb. So the train came around from behind the tree, came out in front. I got down on a knee and handed her the box, and she opened it up, obviously started crying. When my dad got rid of the couch late years later, we went over and we cut out a section of the couch off the pillow that she still has in her side of the bed and the box that I proposed to her with the original wrapping paper all melted in her hand from all the sweat when she was sweating when she was opening it up.
Wow.
That's great. Thank you, Joel. All right, let's go to Dan. Dan, how'd you do it? How'd you propose?
Hey, hello there. This story is about my parents. They were childhood friends because both grandmothers worked in the loop, so both families knew each other. And in fact, we even have a picture of my father holding my mother as a baby. He was about 4 years old. But, you know, they went their separate ways, and Dad went off to the war, World War II. And when he came back, he looked up, you know, my mom and grandmother, and they happened to be talking. They were talking, and he said to my mother, he said, why don't we get married or something? And she looked at him, and she said, we'll get married or nothing. And it's one of my favorite stories about my folks. It really is. Because they, you know, they knew each other for a long time.
Forever.
But
sure.
They lost track, you know. And then and mom and dad or grandma moved to Wisconsin. And my father's parents stayed in Chicago on Campbell Avenue. But, you know, then they got together after the war. And, you know, that story about mom saying we'll get married or nothing.
How about we get married or something? How about we get married or nothing?
I love the way they did it back then.
All right, let's do one more. Let's go to Jim. Jim, how did you propose?
Morning. How are you today?
Good, man.
Good. I had known my wife for about 9 months. She was 19. I was 21. And had it all planned out late October. We were going to El Bianco's on Southwest Side, 63rd Street. Great Italian restaurant. She was dressed up. Fantastic. I had a 3-piece suit on. I thought we're going to do this. And before we had our reservations, we were watching a movie at home, and I got extremely nervous, took the ring out, put it on the wrong finger of the wrong hand.
Oh, no.
And the movie happened to be an extremely romantic movie called Blazing Saddles.
Yeah! Nothing says I love you like Blazing Saddles.
Exactly.
It's wonderful. Thank you, Jim.
It's 33 years now.
33
oh,
years. Happy Valentine's Day. We have a $100 gift card to give away to Southern Cut at 198 East Delaware, right across from the Hancock. We'll give that away. We have to decide. Just throw them in a hat. Okay?
Throw them in a hat, because they're all such great stories.
Throw them in a hat, and we'll pick a winner. Coming up next, and Bill and Wendy at noon at 720 WGN. All right. Pete and Jane in for Bill and Wendy. They'll be at Gabe's Place in Glenwood. Steve Bertrand has the business lunch in about 90 seconds. And we have to give away that $100 gift card.
Yeah. Who's
the
winner?
Did you pick somebody?
Yeah. You know what? My vote is for the Blazing Saddles guy. He had me at the three-piece suit.
All right. $100 gift card to Southern Cut, new barbecue restaurant at 198 East Delaware, right across from the Hancock. All right. Happy
Fantastic.
Valentine's Day, every day. Everybody, are you going to go out and get Kurt something now?
Well, I probably will. I think Walgreens is across the street. I'll get some chocolate, which he won't eat, so I'll get it for myself, right?
No, I mean,
every day is Valentine's Day with Kurt.
What are you going to make for dinner?
Probably some chicken. Chicken and a salad like I make every day. It's not special. I made a nice dinner on Sunday. Does that count? Now you're making me worry. No, he doesn't.
No.
It doesn't matter.
All right. You guys have a wonderful Valentine's Day. Bill and Wendy are coming up next. They are live again from Gabe's Place in Glenwood. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.